she said, "Do you come from a land down under, where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover. Yeah. You better run, you better take cover."
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Cider Nation podcast, a unique baseball podcast brought to you by Jay Birdie Baseball Company. Get your Canadian baseball apparel at jaybirdie.ca and make sure to follow them on social media. Today, we have former AAA and Team Canada catcher Emerson Frosted. No, thanks for coming on, Emerson.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited. Always happy to chat some baseball.
I guess first things first, what did sports look like for you growing up?
So I was born in Vancouver, played baseball and a little bit of hockey there. And then when I was 10, we moved to Calgary. So kind of kept with hockey for a year or two after we moved here, as far as winter sports, and then kept rolling with baseball, Cal West Little League, and then the dogs program after that. And then winters was, it was a mix. The hockey kind of fell away, and I did biathlon for a couple of years, played basketball for a couple of years, played basketball in high school as well, volleyball. So the winter was kind of a mishmash of a little bit of everything, but baseball was kind of there since I was three or four, kind of played baseball every summer.
Yeah, and then I guess more specifically baseball-wise there, Emerson, like kind of what did it look like recruiting-wise for you for college?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's a little better now with video and, you know, Canada's scouted a little better. But, you know, back then I was at the OK Falls baseball camp and one of the coaches from LC State was there. So that led to a visit down to Lewis Clark State where I ended up going. But even just apart from that, you know, there was PBA, Kubi's program down in Lethbridge, UBC was good then. But there just wasn't a ton of exposure. And that was kind of the driving force behind the dogs program when John and a couple of our other dads started that up, just to get that exposure, get down to the States. We got to go play in, you know, tournaments in Arizona, Florida, Utah, you know, the whole gamut of kind of the hotbeds of baseball down in the States, and that led to a bit of exposure. But even then I only had two offers outside of Canada. One was in San Diego and at Lewis Clark State, and you know, the private tuition in California was a little out of our range back then, so I ended up at LC State, and I'm glad I did. It was a great choice, and really enjoyed my time there. But it was tough. That dogs team, I graduated high school in 2000, so that dogs team was kind of the first graduating class, and we had 9 or 10 guys ended up playing college ball, which was crazy for back then. And it was good to see some guys stay at home in Canada, went to school, and other guys got to go down south and continue down there. But yeah, it was tough to get a look. You know, it's still tough, but it's better now than it was then.
Yeah, definitely the recruiting part has changed. And, you know, even I remember having to send, like, I swear it was like VHS tapes, and like a little different now.
Yeah, little, that good thing technology has come a long way since then. The little, those grainy VHS videos, you know, didn't really show the swing or the pitching all that well.
How was your time at LC State there, Emerson? Like, you got to play for Mr. Ed Sheff?
Yeah, the legend. Yeah, unfortunately he passed away, but he had an amazing life and an amazing career. And looking back on it, that was the best decision I could have made. Like I just said, I didn't have a ton of options, but I'm glad it worked out that way. It was a kind of a baseball powerhouse in NAIA, and you know, we'd go on the road and beat Pac-10, Pac-12 teams now pretty regularly. And Ed was an amazing guy. He was the tough love, like Daryl Sutter kind of mold of, you know, a hard ass coach, and he demanded a lot of you, and some guys, you know, didn't thrive under that, and you know, that's okay. The program wasn't for everybody, but I redshirted for a year. I was 17 when I graduated high school, so I was pretty young going down there competing against 21, 22 year old American guys that you know, had a ton more experience, played JUCO or had 2 or 3 years of college baseball already. So I redshirted for a year. I think I put on like 30 pounds my first year of at college. I went from like 170 to 210, I think it was. It was a great learning experience, just maturing physically and mentally, getting the reps that we just don't get here in Canada, you know, hitting in the cages all winter and working out and lifting and competing against, you know, these top NAIA guys that LC State had. And it really just skyrocketed my development in that year when I didn't play in any real games, but we would scrimmage all the time. The fall program was great. It was just an eye-opening experience going from high school baseball in Alberta to, you know, a top college program in the States. It was a big adjustment, and I'm glad I redshirted. It was the best thing for me, and it was tough to take at the time. I didn't think that I should be redshirting, but looking back on it, it was totally the right decision. And then played 2 years after that there, and we won the NAIA World Series both of those years. So it was an amazing experience. We had team success, I had individual success, and just grew a ton as a baseball player.
Were some of the stories I've heard about Ed, were they true?
Oh yeah. They're it's probably worse than the stories, honestly. Like I was there kind of later in his career. So he, I want to say, toned it down, but if you compare it to other places, it's not toned down. But like the heyday of the 80s and 90s, it wasn't quite that bad. Like a couple of our assistant coaches when I was there played under Ed, like back in the heyday, you know, bare knuckle boxing and that kind of thing. We trained to do the boxing, and right before we were about to do it, the school got a new president or dean or whatever it was, and that person got wind of what we were doing and shut it down. So that was, as far as I know, the year before I got there was the last year they did boxing. But I got to see, like you said, the grainy VHS videos of like our shortstop was from Japan, and he was like a 170, small guy, but super fast, like really good infielder. And he just got knocked out like 1 second into the fight. He was fighting some guy from California and just drilled him and knocked him on his ass, and he was out cold. So like those things are all true. We did, instead of boxing, we did no rules basketball in the gym. And the gym when I was there is kind of those old school bleachers where they roll up kind of into a wall.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It made like the perfect, it looked like an indoor soccer arena / indoor football. It was like turned into like a steel death cage, and we just played shirts and skins, no rules basketball. Our starting center fielder yanked his shoulder out of its socket and just popped it right back in and kept going. Like we would chop wood as our fundraiser. So we'd have like 3 or 4, 8, 9, 10 hour days in the fall where you had to, your four man crew had to go chop like 8 cords of wood and deliver it and stack it all at somebody's house before you could come back to the school. So it was crazy. Like all those stories are true. I heard the one where two guys were going to be the center fielder. It was a pretty tight competition, and or maybe it was three guys. I can't remember exactly, but Ed just hit a ball into center field and said, whoever brings it back to me is going to start. So the guys were just like wrestling, fighting in the outfield. Yeah, it was a different way of doing things. Probably wouldn't fly these days, but like the concept behind it, I'm totally behind. Like there's some lines you can't cross for good reason, for player safety and that kind of thing. But his whole thing was mental toughness. Like there was 30 or 40 guys on the team that were all really good baseball players, but the thing that would separate you is your mental toughness. And, you know, when you're in the NAIA World Series and the pressure's on, and, you know, we would get really good crowds there. We'd have 4,000 or 5,000 people watching, and, you know, like, can you handle it when the pressure's on? And it was just such a cool learning experience. And, you know, maybe Ed's methods were maybe a little crazy for some, but the point behind it, you know, still rings true today. It's growing as a person. And do you have that ability to fight through adversity and, you know, in life or on the baseball field? So it was a unreal experience for me.
And then you got drafted there, Emerson. And could you talk to us a little bit about that experience and kind of your transition to the minors?
Yeah, for sure. So I got drafted in 03 in the 13th round by the Rangers. I was a redshirt sophomore. So like I said, I had only played 2 years. I didn't sign right away. Ed was coaching in the Alaskan Summer League for Fairbanks, and he had asked me to go up and play for him that summer, well before the draft. And I said, yes, obviously it's a great league with amazing history up there. And, you know, some of the top players in the U.S. go up there for the summer. So I had committed to do that. I had 2 years of eligibility left. And, you know, like I said, I was kind of a late bloomer out of high school and all that. So I wasn't sure if I was going to sign or not. I didn't sign right away. I went up to Alaska, played the whole season up there. I actually was back at LC State for my what would have been my redshirt junior year. And it was the day before classes start. The Rangers kind of got back on the phone with me, and we were able to work something out. So I was like mentally ready to go back to school, but it worked out in the end. So I didn't play pro ball that first summer. I was up in Alaska. I went down to fall instructional league with the Rangers, and yeah, it worked out great. I had a good run with them, but it was, it was an exciting time, and it was a time, you know, I kind of leaned on my family and the people around me to try and make the right decision. I was still only 20 and, you know, had only played 2 years of college and, you know, thought I had a little bit more developing to do just coming out of Canada. We're a little bit behind, at least back then. So it was a tough decision, but I'm glad I made it. It was obviously a super exciting time to have that option to go pro or back to college. And and Ed was super supportive. I think he was mad for about 30 seconds, but you know, he's such a good guy, and he really does care about his players. So it all worked out in the end.
And then correct me if I'm wrong, Emerson, like when you were in the minors, like you ended up kind of transitioning to catcher, or did you catch in college? Or
yeah, I caught maybe two or three games at LC State only because of injury. Like I, you know, caught a few games in Little League and didn't really catch at all with the Dogs. I don't think, you know, maybe once here or there as an emergency, but our starting catcher at LC State my last year, he hurt his shoulder. So I kind of emergency caught for two or three games, but really hardly any experience at all. I was playing third quite a bit, and then some first base at LC State. So hardly any catching experience. Was drafted as a third baseman, played my first 2 years in low A exclusively at third, you know, maybe played it first a game or two, but I didn't really start catching until my third year of pro ball. One of our other catchers in the Rangers system blew out his elbow. So he had Tommy John surgery. He was out for the year. So I was going to go up to high A that year, which was in Bakersfield. And, you know, being a third baseman, it's probably the easiest position to transition from. And being a left-handed hitter, you know, I wasn't hitting 25 home runs a year. I was hitting like 15 or whatever my first couple years, or my second year at least anyways. So it was a chance to kind of further my career. You know, if you're not hitting for a ton of power, it's tough to make it too far as a third baseman. But you know, with my skill set, had a pretty good arm, you know, third baseman type body. So transitioned to catching, really got a crash course in spring training that year. Worked with Scott Service. He was our field coordinator with the Rangers. He's the manager for the Seattle Mariners now, but he was a big league catcher for a long time. So I worked with him like on the backfields for 6 weeks before the season started. And that was like my catching training, really. So I was brutal that first year. Like balls flying all over the place, pass balls, couldn't throw to second, like with any accuracy whatsoever. But it was just like drinking from a fire hose. It was crazy, learning a lot, and then kind of getting thrown into being the starting catcher for that team right away. And I'm glad I got that opportunity, because the second year of the year I came, the next year I went to double A and was catching a bit again, and was just so much more comfortable. Just because, you know, you either sink or swim. And I think I sunk a little bit that first year. It was pretty brutal, but got a lot of experience and a lot of reps at least. And caught, not exclusively, but caught a lot more the rest of my career. Still played a bit of first and all that, but was mostly a catcher for the rest of my time.
Yeah, and you did a little bit already there, Emerson, but like, could you describe kind of what type of player you were?
Yeah. I had a pretty good arm, left-handed hitter. Didn't hit for a ton of power. My average was kind of all over the map. Had a couple really good years average wise, hit 12, 15, 17 home runs, something like that, at the lower levels. And then, tried to really work on my defense, as I went up into Double-A and Triple-A. My first year in Double-A, had some good offensive years in Double-A, but not great. And, you know, if I was going to keep progressing, it was going to be because I was, kind of an all-around catcher, solid defensively, left-handed hitter, you know, some power. That was kind of it. Had a little bit of flexibility. I could play third, play first, catch. Tried to hit for some power, but I definitely wasn't a speedster by any means. So, you know, kind of a corner infielder catcher type.
And then, you know, I've kind of had guys from all over on the show, but I've never really had anyone talk about like winter ball in Hawaii. Like, how was that experience for you?
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah, that was that first year in Bakersfield. So that was my first year catching. Played the season in high A in Bakersfield. And then they were, you know, the Hawaiian League had been a thing. Like, I don't know the exact dates, but I want to say like early 80s or 80s and 90s. And then it kind of folded up for a bit. I think they had a Triple-A team there for a while. So like Hawaii, they love their baseball. It's just so hard logistically to have a regular season team there. And then the Winter League, the facilities were kind of brutal back in the day. So they were trying to bring it back, and it was awesome. Like the fall league, the Arizona fall league, was more for like Double-A, Triple-A guys that are a bit closer to the big leagues, that fall league. And then the idea behind Hawaii was for more like Single-A, low A, high A kind of guys, maybe a few Double-A guys. So it was geared to be a winter league for the lower level minor league guys. And it was great. Like same kind of thing as the fall league. Each organization would send their kind of their best four or five prospects, and the Rangers prospects were all good. A couple of them made it to the big leagues. We had Jabba Chamberlain on our team, Ian Kennedy, like guys that played in the big leagues for quite a while. It was a cool experience because you get to play with guys from other organizations and kind of see how they do it. You know, I had only been with the Rangers at that point, but you kind of see what the other guys are being taught and pick their brains a little bit. And, you know, it's kind of the best prospects from all over the minors at that level. So it was a really good experience. Plus you're in Hawaii, you're only playing 4 or 5 days a week. So you get a couple of days off, go to the beach, you know, work out, do that kind of thing. It was intense when you're working, but it's not like the minor league season where you play, you know, 30 days in a row and then get one day off and then 20 days in a row and one day off. Like you had some time to, you know, think about what you're doing and work on things. And then also, you know, some time away from the field just because it was after the season. So it's a long season, and, you know, you kind of get a bit of time to unwind while you're still working and trying to get better. So it was a crazy, crazy good experience. My now wife came over there with me as well. So we got to spend some time together, and I really enjoyed it.
And then you got to represent Canada several times, including at the Olympics. Could you talk to us a little bit about that experience, Emerson?
Yeah, that was, I mean, looking back on it now, you know, when you're a kid, you always want to play in the big leagues, and I got close, but unfortunately didn't quite make it all the way. But looking back on it now, that I for sure say that was the highlight of my career was getting to represent Canada, and played in a couple Pan Am games, one Pan Am game, couple World Cups, the Olympics. It's completely different baseball, like seeing the World Baseball Classic just, you know, recently, how intense it is. And it's more like a playoff atmosphere, and, you know, playing for Team Canada in those tournaments was even like beyond that, in my opinion. Just guys that are, you know, either had made it to the big leagues and were back down in the minors, because big leaguers couldn't go to the Olympics, or still can't, at least as far as I know. So it was minor league guys that, were really trying to make their mark and really trying to win for Canada. It was so cool to go from, you know, minor league baseball, obviously it's a team sport, but guys are trying to get promoted and trying to make it to the big leagues. And, you know, it's the team atmosphere and you want the team to win, but really at the end of the day, you're trying to do well yourself. Like, you're still a good teammate, but it's different. It's not all about winning every day and going and play with Team Canada. And when I think 06 was my first year with the senior team. I had played on the junior team in 01, but in 06, that was the start of the qualifying process for the 08 Olympics. And, you know, guys like Stubby Clapp and Ryan Redmanovich and Kevin Nicholson that had been part of that program for a long time, like, they just were so good at setting the tone and making sure everybody was on the same page. And, you know, everybody bought into winning and doing the best for Canada. And it's so cool to see how far that program has come. You know, like in the 04 Olympics, they were so close to getting a medal, and just to see, you know, we've won a couple of Pan Am golds, and just to see the development of that program specifically and how good of a job Greg Hamilton has done developing baseball in Canada. It makes me really proud that, you know, I was a small part of it, and it was the best baseball experience I had by far.
And then, Emerson, you have a career 4.91 ERA. And, you know, even like a zero ERA in AAA, like, how was that?
Yeah, that was fun. I think it was my first outing in AA. I got yelled at, like, after this first or second pitch, because I had pitched in high school. It was always fun to do. And, like, I can't remember what the exact velocity was, but it was like close to 90. It was just like natural not to lob it in there. And so the pitching coach started yelling at me to not, like, don't hurt your arm, that kind of thing from the dugout. But no, it was super fun. It's like something that you look back on is, I think I had like, I don't know, four or five appearances as a pitcher, and obviously in blowout games when we were getting smoked. So it's like no pressure, just go out and try and get some outs. But it was super fun. Like, it brought me back to pitching with the dogs and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it was so fun. I gave up one or two massive home runs. So I'm glad I got that experience as in pro ball. And, you know, the hitter hits it and he's laughing at you. Like, we're both just laughing at each other. Like, this is crazy. But yeah, it was super fun.
Well, and with it being Sidearm Nation, like, did you drop down at all?
No. I think that would have probably blown out my shoulder or my elbow. I was always over the top guy. And I don't have that in the repertoire, but I definitely, as a catcher, appreciated that, you know, guys coming out of the pen, dropping down and giving the hitters a different look. And, you know, I always enjoyed working with sidearm pitchers, just as a catcher generally. I really love the strategy part of it and getting to know hitters and their weaknesses and getting to know my pitching staff and working with them a lot. So yeah, no, definitely all respect to the sidearmers.
Yeah. And like, just as a catcher, like, you know, any guys that kind of stood out, you know, sidearm submarine pitchers that you caught?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think. Not specifically sidearmers, no. No, sorry. I wish I would have thought of that before. I could have done a little more digging.
No. Well, I mean, even just, I guess, you know, like from a catching perspective, like any advice for pitchers, like kind of, you know, anything that you're kind of, you know, looking for as a catcher, or like, you know, attacking hitters or pitching to hitters?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the easiest thing is to trust your catcher and know, like, you obviously got to get to know your catcher, and not every catcher does the work that they need to do, but I like to think that most do, and most catchers are responsible and know the hitters and know, you know, the game plan. And, you know, as a pitcher, not so much from experience, but more so just working with pitchers for so long, you know, things can speed up quickly and your mind starts racing and then you start questioning things. And, you know, it's just one less thing to worry about. Like, as a pitcher, you know, focus on execution and throwing the pitch with conviction and knowing that this is the right call. Like, let the catcher worry about the strategy And that's like a general rule. Some pitchers, you know, think the game really well and some don't. And if you're a pitcher that thinks the game really well, like, you know, work with your catcher and develop the game plan. But, you know, pitching so hard already, like, just worry about executing and trust that your catcher also knows what they're doing and is doing their job. Because it just eliminates one more thing that's going up in your brain, you know, when things are, you know, bases are loaded, nobody out, like, things move pretty quickly. And, you know, the more you can slow things down and focus just on one thing, you know, the better you're going to do in the long run.
Yeah, no, that's very good advice. I definitely just tried to almost trust whatever catcher I had. And I mean, some of that, you know, had to kind of build that relationship with too. But I mean, at the same time, it just made my life way, way easier on the mound. And just, I didn't want to think at all on the mound.
Yeah, for sure. And there's some guys, like I said, that really enjoy the strategy part of it. But and you hit on a good thing, like, part of a catcher's job, and a pitcher too, but really in my mind, it's the catcher's responsibility to build that rapport with the pitcher, with every pitcher on the staff. It's obviously something that takes time, and there's no switch that you can flip and, you know, be in complete rhythm with each other. It's something that is developed, you know, in the bullpen and in practice and then more so during the games. And it's hard early in the season if you haven't played with that person before to develop that. But that's something that I really took responsibility for, and I was taught to do it that way, was to get to know all the pitchers, and they're not just on the field, but like, get to know them as a person as well. Cause, you know, sometimes you turn into psychologists out there pretty quickly, you know, calming pitchers down and trying to get things back on the rails. Cause it's such a mental sport. Like, you look at basketball and football and, you know, hockey even, like, it's such a physical sport, and baseball is all like physical, obviously, but there's so much more mental aspect to it and strategy. And, you know, the more you get to know someone, the better and more quickly you can get them back on track. And I love that about catching, was, you know, getting to know my guys and my pitchers and really building that relationship. Cause it's so important. If you're not, you know, trusting and loving that person that you're competing with, you're a step behind already.
Yeah. And it's definitely where you see, like, a lot of catchers end up becoming, you know, managers, right? I mean, you know, good percentage of it. Right. And, what did that look like for you post playing wise? Did you get into coaching or?
Not really. I've always, well, not so much lately. I got two young boys at home, so free time is hard to come by. But when I was getting to the later stages of my career, I would help the dogs program out in the winter and try and coach a bit, you know, just kind of as a guest coach, not really managing or official coach in any way. But I always thought that I would love to get back into baseball. I went to law school after I was done playing, and the reason why I went was to become a GM. Like, that was my post playing dream, was to be a GM of a major league team. And, you know, life kind of gets in the way from time to time, but, you know, that's still in the back of my mind. I would still love to get back in the game. I was down in Arizona with Team Canada for the World Baseball Classic here a few months ago. And just, that was the first time I had been around baseball, you know, other than a few things here and there, since 2017 at the last World Baseball Classic. So it had been quite a while. And, you know, you get those juices get flowing pretty quickly when you're back around the game and you realize how much you miss it. And talking to some of the guys that were there and coaching and that kind of thing. So, like, there's a lot of options and things out there, but, you know, the love of the game never goes away. You just kind of have to put it aside for a while. But, you know, some of my buddies that I played with are coaching and working, you know, either on college teams or in the minor leagues. A couple are, you know, on the major league support staff, that kind of thing. So just talking to them and kind of trying to keep up with the developments and hear what they're doing. And so it's cool to live kind of through them a bit. But yeah, always have that goal kind of in the back of my mind of getting back into the game one day.
And then, Emerson, like, any thoughts on kind of how catching has changed a little bit, like kind of going down on a knee and, you know, from that standpoint?
Yeah. So I'm not a big fan of it, but there are people who can do it. And there are people who probably shouldn't do it. Like I really do think it takes away from blocking and throwing for a lot of catchers. Like when I was a kid, Benito Santiago was like the only guy, he like throwing from his knees down on a knee catching. And like, yeah, he was the only one that I can remember ever doing it. And now everybody's doing it. And, you know, Santiago was a super good athlete. Like, Hudge Rodriguez hardly ever did it. He was an amazing athlete. Like, I get the analytics behind it, and, you know, I do see the benefit of, you know, getting more strikes called and all that. But, you know, the baseball that I do watch, there's just so many guys missing blocks and, you know, making poor throws to second because they're down on a knee. And, you know, the analytics say that, well, if you get more strikes called than you maybe would otherwise, that adds up to more run saved in the long run. And yeah, I guess I understand that part of it, but there's some guys that just can't do it. Like if you want to be an all around catcher, you know, there's times to do it and there's times not to do it. I'm of the opinion that blocking and throwing are just as important and you should be well-rounded and, you know, nobody on, obviously go have at it, try and get as many calls as you can, but I'm personally not a big fan of it for most catchers.
And then Emerson, it's just time for our ninth inning call to the bullpen. So just going to be some random questions just to learn a little bit more about you.
Sure.
Favorite NHL team?
Oh, it's tough to say these days, but I'm a Flames fan. Like I said, I was born in Vancouver. So when I was super young, I was a Canucks fan. That was the Pavel Bure days. Russian Rocket, got to see him fly up and down the ice a bit. But when we moved to Calgary when I was 10, kind of jumped on the Flames bandwagon pretty quickly. And last year was pretty rough. So hopefully, I guess Conroy got announced yesterday. Hopefully he can steer the ship in the right direction.
Favorite travel destination?
I'll say Kauai, the island of Kauai in Hawaii. And my college roommate at LC State was from there, and it's a super fun place to go. His family and all his friends are very hospitable and got some amazing beaches and all that. So that's my favorite place to go.
All-time favorite professional wrestler.
Wrestler. Oh, I wasn't a huge wrestling guy when I was a kid, but I'll say Bret the Hitman Hart for the local flavor here in Calgary.
Favorite baseball movie of all time?
I'm going to say a little bit of an obscure one, and I think it's called Everybody Wants Some, or Everybody Got Some, or Everybody Wants Some. It's a Linklater film, and it's set, I think it's a Texas college town. I could be wrong on that. I've only seen it once, actually, and it was a long time ago, so I need to watch it again. But it reminded me of LC State so much. Like, one of the scenes, they're playing ping pong in the baseball house where a couple of the guys live, and they're, like, smashing paddles and talking shit to each other and all that. And, like, that was my college experience to a T, was – like the old guys taking the young guys under their wing, you know, going out to parties, playing ping pong, like just super competitive in everything they do. And it was a really cool insight into college baseball. So a little bit of an obscure reference there.
And if you could golf or have dinner with any three people dead or alive, who would you like to go with?
Oh, that's a good question. Dead or alive. Tiger Woods, just because he's the legend. Wayne Gretzky would be on the list. And Larry Walker.
And would you want it to be golf or dinner? Probably golf with Tiger, maybe? Or?
Golf, yeah, yeah. I'm a newfound golf nut. So, I've golfed a couple times a year when I was a kid, like hardly at all, but... even before I was done playing, the last few years I was playing, I got into golf quite a bit. So definitely golf.
Any particular course?
Gotta say Augusta. Never played there, and I kind of impossible to get on. So I would say Augusta for sure.
And, you know, ask this question to others, but I mean, you were already an Olympian, but if you could be an Olympian in any sport other than baseball, summer or winter, what sport would you like to try?
I would say hockey, just because they do it right. Like, they have the best of the best from the NHL. And as a baseball player, I say that I may or may not have still made the Canadian team if there was major league guys involved. So I might've just hooped myself out of an Olympic spot, but yeah, I would say definitely hockey. Just like, I remember watching the 2010 Vancouver gold medal game in Arizona with a couple Canadian baseball players to this day. Like, I remember the whole day, like the whole country just got behind it and it was crazy cool. So that would be for sure hockey.
And then lastly, Emerson, on the 2004 Clinton Lumberjacks team, do you know the name of the pitcher he was your teammate, but he's actually still pitching in the bigs?
Jesse Chavez.
Yep.
Nice. Yeah. Absolutely. I saw his name the other day, actually. Yeah. He's had, yeah, long, like Ian Kinsler was on that team. Chavez, I think one or two other guys made it to the big leagues for a little bit, but Kinsler and Chavez definitely had the longest careers, and Kinsler was done, I think, like 2 or 3 years ago. So it's crazy to see that. Yeah. Like, I just turned 40 in January. So good for him. Like, he was skinny fat. He had like the worst body of all time for a pitcher. Like, he had a belly, but he was also skinny. So I guess maybe that you shouldn't work out if you want to pitch for 20 years in the big leagues. I don't know, but good for him. No, he was a good dude. Haven't talked to him in a long time, but yeah, good to see him still going.
No, I appreciate you coming on, Emerson. Is there any shout outs before we sign off?
No, just, I guess just to the baseball Alberta community. Like, it's cool to be a part of the history and see how much it's come, how far it's come. You know, there's a lot of good programs in the province now. So just happy to see that baseball continues to grow in Alberta and Canada generally. So yeah, that's it.
She said, "Do you come from a land down under, where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover, yeah. You better run, you better take cover."